You are listening to a podcast from West Hill United Church located in Scarborough, Ontario, Canada. These podcasts are made possible by the generous support of our listeners, volunteers, and members of our community. To donate, go to our website, www.westhill.net, and click on the Canada Helps button, or go to westhill.net/donate.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Kevin Jackson. Welcome to West Hill, where there's never a dull moment. As a matter of fact, a dull moment might even be appreciated once in a while here. We wish to acknowledge that we are on the traditional territory of the Mississaugas of the New Credit First Nation lands, which were previously occupied by the Seneca and Huron-Wendat First Nations. How can this place be both an oasis of spiritual comfort and development, and also a place of uncomfortable turmoil sometimes? 2 weeks ago, you went through an important introspection and outrospection, as I might call it, exercise, that may have tested your current understanding of where West Hill is, or where we may go in the future. This work will need to continue over the coming weeks and months ahead. West Hill United is not a spectator sport. We are challenged each week to empathize with global, regional, local, and right at home issues. We try to seek truths and understanding. And then we ask ourselves how we might help, how we might do good or be better. Last week we reflected on lives lost. We celebrated the impact that those people had on our lives, and we reflected on the costs of death, life, and love. This week, as we honor and remember the sacrifices made by many to Canada in the past century in particular, I encourage and challenge you to reflect on the costs paid that these lives represent. Many of you may not be able to put names to any of those fallen, but some of you will. Perhaps an uncle or someone else you know served or is serving now in our armed forces. How many of you have actually visited any of the European war memorials or battle sites? Quite a number. I am told, I haven't done that personally, but I am told that that can be a very compelling perspective, new perspective for people. What stories, we could ask ourselves, were told to the sons and daughters who went to fight? What stories are told to the family and friends of those who serve? And what stories do we tell ourselves? Allow yourself to reflect deeply as we honor our fallen today, so that we may discover another gem of truth that we may sow into the accumulated tapestry of our collected.
We just take this time to what may seem repetitive, but it's a reminder of big, important things. And the first is that I've been doing a tremendous amount of reading for my studies and watching through history, people wrestle with what is the foundation, what is the ground, what can we know for certain, and we did that searching too. What can we know for certain? And we've arrived at that bedrock idea that what we know for certain is that we are alive, and here in this great big interconnected web. Which is an honor to be part of and a great responsibility to be part of, because it impacts us every moment and we impact it every moment. We impact each other. And so we come here to remind ourselves of that big truth, and then we ask ourselves the question, how do I fit into that web? What influence should I have? How do I respond when it impacts me? And we just keep choosing that word love and all that it can mean in all its permutations, in all its individual and local and global manifestations. And because sometimes we don't know what to do, and sometimes we think we do, and someone else can look at us and say, not that, or this instead, or the way you came across was this, we need to learn how to love in this life. And that's why we come together humbly. I don't think there's a person here that doesn't realize that every single person in this room blows it sometimes so badly, and that we can look in each other's eyes and say, got it, know that, me too, how can I help, how can I stand with you? And that's the beautiful part of being together. So I'm just going to play one of our centering songs, and just ground yourselves and recommit to being guided by that hugely important principle and sharing the wisdom for it.
We have two readings today. First from Ursula Le Guin, who is a science fiction writer. I always wondered why the storytellers leave housekeeping and cooking out of their tales. Isn't that what all the great wars are fought for? So that at the day's end, a family may eat together in a peaceful house? The tale tells how the Lord of Manva hunted and gathered roots and cooked their suppers while they were camped in exile in the foothills of Sul. But it doesn't say what their wives and children were living on in their city, left ruined and desolate by the enemy. They were finding food too, somehow, cleaning house and honoring the gods, the way we did in the siege and under the tyranny of our enemies. When the heroes came back from the mountain, they were welcomed with a feast. I'd like to know what the food was and how those women managed it, offered as wisdom for the journey. Second reading, also from a science fiction or from a fiction writer. To read fiction means to play a game by which we give sense to the immensity of things that happened, are happening, or will happen in the actual world. By reading narrative, we escape the anxiety that attacks us when we try to say something true about the world. This is the consoling function of narrative, the reason people tell stories and have told stories from the beginning of time, offered as wisdom for the journey.
Greta wrote words to a hymn cast to a tune by Ralph Vaughan Williams, who, if you know his music, it's powerful, moving, and wonderful. She thought it was a commonly known tune, and it isn't. So it's going to be a little trickier to learn it. So I very much wanted to just read you the words before you tangled with putting them to music. She sent this to me at work, and I had just spent the last three clients that came in for counseling had told me of such conflict and turmoil and sadness in their lives. And yet we were working in a place where the values are the same as this place here, exactly. Compassion and justice and integrity and care and kindness and patience and tolerance. And so it was beautiful to read this, and I love that I go to church in a place where you can take everything we say and take it to your workplace and it fits the same. So let me just read this to you. It's called May We Cast the Vision. Are we not still dreaming of a world of peace where all live in freedom and all hatreds ceased? Are we not still hoping for a fair new day, one for which all suffering long before did fade? Have we not the knowledge that can feed each child, shelter every family, make nations reconcile? Have we not the wisdom to look back and see all that's come between us throughout history? Can we not be faithful to the call of love? All it builds between us, is that not enough? Can we not find reasons to reach out and share all we own together, all because we care? On this day, we're dreaming of a world made bright, freed from all its sorrows, living into light. May we feel the courage stirring deep within. May we cast the vision and this work begin.
That's the problem when you grow up in a congregation with a highly trained organist who forced you to sing every song in that red hymn book that was published in 1971, which hardly anyone had to work their way through. I'm sure, I'm convinced, and I've said this before, that that's the reason the United Church and the Anglican Church stopped their conversation about joining together, because that's the first thing they worked on together, and both denominations hated it. Anyhow, moving into a more somber note, if that tune wasn't somber enough for you, into our focus moment for today. And of course, today we're doing our Remembrance Day service, so that's what was on my mind at the time. You can take your poppies off and leave them here before you leave if you're afraid of being caught with a poppy on after the date. But I knew that we would have poppies with us today. Did you see the poppies spilling out of the seams that line the foundations of the Tower of London, 800,000 and more? Or read them strewn in poetry across the now quiet, peace-filled land? Do they touch your heart as you watch them jaunt up and down on lapels that race along our busy streets? Did you hear stories told, dark tales of loss and fear and dread? Or feel deep silences woven of horror and pain, the tally of hubris, anger, and greed? Did the memory of a story heard long ago flit across your fingers as you pinned blood red to your jacket today? Or were they empty of the memories that are not ours, lost in the vastness of before? Can such stories told anew teach us peace or only shame? Can this single velvet flower teach us anything? There are some people here this Sunday who are here again for a second time, because the last time we put them in groups and made them do the work of being in a congregation in groups. And they came this time because it would be sort of a normal Sunday, and I didn't want to break it to them. That wasn't going to be very normal, but we'll do our best. Everything up till now, including Roger, has been normal. But today, I want to talk about stories. I want to talk about the stories that we tell and the stories that we don't tell. And the stories we don't have to tell. Not have to in terms of are forced to, but have to in terms of the fact that we don't have them, and so we cannot tell them. And those are the stories that are so deeply important on a day like today. When we try to remember the travesties of massive altercations that brought so much of the world into conflict, that shaved off an entire generation twice of its men and many women, that continue to tell their stories in ways that cause us to reflect and pause. But over the years, we've lost so much in what that telling. The stories that we experience in our everyday lives are the books that we read, the fiction that we pick up. I'm thrilled that Margaret Atwood's The Handmaid's Tale has been picked up, 40 years after it was written, and is now coming into its own and being told as something, I think, that reflects so truly on what's going on in the world. Her fictional tale, of course, not something that she would have wanted to come about, but that seems to be what's happening. So it's a serious story for these days. But the books we read at night before we go to bed, we want them to be about something that's perhaps a little more soothing, perhaps can add some flavor of, you know, joy or love or family into our lives that we don't have on a day-to-day basis. Scott reads to me every night from some kind of series of fantasy. Usually has a good and an evil power that are, you know, raging against one another in kingdoms that have all kinds of peculiar natural things, but are interwoven with all kinds of incredible supernatural things as well. And sometimes the series go on and on. We're in book 3 now of a 4-part series. We read the entire 13-book Belgariad series, which I think I've mentioned a few times, simply because the impact of 13 books is pretty huge. Some of our favorites are by a computer programmer who works in the States, and at night she writes these incredible tales, and we have used one of her stories to create the 7 Bowls of Reconciliation service that we've done twice here since the end of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission in 2015. Our stories follow similar plots. They start out with some kind of a problem or an issue, and that problem is heightened, the intensity grows, the conflicts become overcome, and then the woman convinces that really horrible man that the only thing that's going to save him is her, and he becomes this lovely person. Well, those are the romance novels that we read. But there are other kinds of novels, too, but they generally follow some kind of a story like that. The story that we hear told so many times is the hero's tale, where someone who is naive to the ways of the world or to the truths of that person's people goes away on their own quest, in to find something. Ancient Greek stories and contemporary stories tell the same story of the hero who goes out clean and confident and sure, is completely broken and disoriented in the process, and comes back having integrated that brokenness and that lack of direction in a new way, in finding a compass from within from which that person can lead. These are powerful stories, and we live them out in our own lives in miniature, sometimes on a day-to-day basis, sometimes over the course of years. Finding from what happens to us and what is caused by us the tales by which we chart our path and figure out who we are. But over the course of the last many years, we've lost so many people who had these stories to tell. As I was thinking about it earlier in the week, I thought of all the people at West Hill who used to be able to stand up with Jean, to identify themselves as someone who had been involved, who had been a member of the armed forces in the Second World War. Some of them had been bombers. Bill Blythe was a bomber. Frank Robb was a courier riding a motorbike, which he did till the very last days of his life, taking messages to the front lines. And was impacted by the realities of that for the whole of his life, as Aileen once shared with me, but Frank never did. The stories that are told, that were told back then, were few. We invited Rob Harvey one time to come and share stories with the children at the front of the church. Do any of you remember that? He talked about scalping people. Yeah, I don't think he was scalping people, but people were being scalped, and we were all racing to protect the children whose ears were hearing that horrific story because we didn't want them to know it, but we had asked him to tell us. And most wouldn't tell us. They wouldn't tell us what happened in the war because the stories were too deep and disturbing and sorrow-filled. And they brought back moments that people didn't want to carry. We now have one person in our congregation who we could ask about those stories, but I want to protect her from having to do that. I think we have amongst us the courage and the capacity to tell a story that we will carry forward with us, because not long from now, maybe in another 10 years, there won't be a single veteran from the Second World War left to be able to share what that was like. And when we don't have the stories that remind us, we stand on a precipice of repetition. That is a frightening thing. As we look around our world now, we see so many ready to push red buttons or ready to antagonize others into wars that are greater than the horrific regional conflicts that are already taking place in this world, claiming the lives of thousands of military troops and thousands of civilians in a story that is so worn but won't go away. And so this morning I wondered if we might tell a story, kind of the way that you used to do it in a, you know, in the couples club or in a kid's birthday party, where one person starts the story and then the next person has to add a sentence to it and the next person has to add another sentence to it. And you'd get it all gobbledygook and all crazy, so it didn't make any sense and you could make fun of it and laugh about how crazy the story got. But I'm hoping that we can build a story because we can trust one another to speak honestly and hold what it is that the person has to say. And that honesty doesn't need to be true. It can be honestly the story of humanity, honestly the story of our species, honestly the story of our past, told with courage and with honor, even if the details have been shifted. I've read so many articles about the 7 mistakes in the movie Dunkirk. I'm tired of it. I don't want to know what the mistakes in the movie Dunkirk are. I still live with Mrs. Miniver's perspective on it. And that was a beautifully depicted story. But those stories that impact us, whether the details of them are true or not, are the stories that we're going to have to carry forward in honor of Jean and all those who have gone before her, who worked in the midst of that conflict and have absorbed its reality and carried it for the rest of their lives. And so I invite you to humor me in this as we go about this work. So the first thing I'm going to ask you to do is for the first 3 rows of seats to turn your chairs around so that you're seeing, so we're all seeing each other. We're in kind of a circle. So we can tell this story together. Can I have the mics? Can I have the mics? Can I have the microphone? Oh, okay. Thank you. It's not a perfect circle, but I do want you to be able to see each other. You have the microphone. Oh, it's... Do you have the microphone? Oh, thank you. Okay. Okay, I have the microphone here. Well, just imagine that this is a perfect circle and you can come back again. So the rise and fall of a story, or the rhythm of a story, starts with some, you know, the introduction of a space. And I'm thinking about the beauty and simplicity of the world at peace. And so I would invite you to start with that kind of a chapter. Telling a story, beginning a story, about what the world at peace looks like. And just one person can share a sentence and then another pick up from that. And you can go for a whole paragraph if you feel compelled to do that. So, who wants to start? Come on. Okay, a bit of an example. Okay. It was a beautiful, quiet day as I stepped outside of my home and saw on the street children at play, people walking their new puppies, the leaves were budding, the sun was high, and all was right with the world. Oh, wait, I haven't turned you on. My apologies. We're not doing that. Is that, this one is not working. Okay. There, that one is. Thank you.
And I was so excited that very afternoon I would be able to visit my friends. And I knew after coming from having a cup of tea and perhaps a cookie, I would feel so much, so very happy, and so much feeling that everything was okay with my world and with our worlds. I was also excited because I was able to go to the protest march that was happening downtown, and they had everybody out there saying their piece, and there were people from the Ontario legislature looking out of the window and listening, and we felt so happy that we could do this here in this country, and nobody was going to stop us.
Excellent segue piece. Next, Cynthia.
And in my heart of hearts, although I knew I was a national acceptance here in this country, coming from the country that I rooted from where there was so much turmoil, and I knew that this excitement was because of the freedom and the practices that have been given to this country that have not reached my family and my friends back home. I trust so much that the work I'm doing will assist in spreading peace to the other countries, and I hope my friends over tea will agree with me.
Next. Come on, you guys have to do something. This side is beating you.
Wait, do I have to?
No, I just really would love you to go.
Oh. Well,
no, go ahead. Yeah.
I have to go.
Oh, no, I don't have to. Okay, anybody over here? Monroe Scott. Thank you.
And I realized how wrong I had been when I stepped out my door that morning, thinking that the world was at peace, because with the protests that I had attended and with the other things I knew, I realized that the world, not my little world, but the world itself is never at peace.
We're getting into some darker areas of the story, which is exactly what I want you to do. As we move into this story, I'll take the next piece. Fast forward 3 or 4 years, my country, which had been at peace, had allied itself with my home country, where those tragedies had been unfolding. And the peace that we had known here had been shattered. I had signed up to be part of those who would go and try to keep peace even while we were at war. And so my life was changed. Anyone want to speculate on what that might have looked like?
I thought because I was doing the right thing that I would be confident and brave, and I found when I faced what was there to be faced, I was as frightened as someone who was in the conflict, because the conflict was us.
Through my money and support, I was a part of the Iraqi troops who drove ISIS out of Raqqa, and we were very successful, but what we left behind was devastation, and I wonder, was my efforts worthwhile?
I looked out onto that devastation and saw the huge craters and the deserted homes, the crumbling towers, and the salty deserts. Yet each step I took, I looked down below and saw the cracks and each piece of gravel. And I noted one small little flower falling up from that crack.
So I asked myself where I would get my strength. And so I allowed myself to have some stillness inside and some space. And I really didn't get an answer, but I felt that I had been given life, and all I could do was do my best with a good heart.
Even though the war wasn't happening maybe in Canada, it was happening in other countries, and my parents, both my mother's family and my father's family, had to flee during the First World War from the Bolshevik Revolution that was the starting. And thanks to the government in Canada, they were taken here as refugees. And they've both gone for quite some time now, but they built a wonderful life here. And my father was a staunch liberal from then on.
As I looked down into the crack of the sidewalk and saw the green of life coming through, it reminded me that no matter where I am, whether it be a country that has welcomed me or at home in the war-torn areas where there's devastation left behind, there's still future growth. I look at that tiny little green plant coming through that crack, and I know deep, deep in my heart that the work I'm doing by simply living my life, looking to the future and knowing that I'm working toward helping others, I can write a new story and I can plant new seeds. I wonder what kind of seeds I would plant today.
Anyone want to follow up on the seed metaphor?
I would plant a magic seed that enabled us always to see the colors of the world, but not the colors of anybody's face.
Any other seeds? What you might plant as a seed? Colette? No? I think we've put together a pretty good story. And I'd encourage you to take it home and keep writing it. When we're alone, it's easier for us to perhaps go places where we're not that comfortable going in a group. Telling a story that may add some gruesome images or may tear people away from us through death as the result of conflict. That may have so scarred us because of our engagement that our guilt forever cripples us in the way that we live going forward, that plants the scenes of trauma in our brain so powerfully that we can't move beyond them. And they repeat themselves with overwhelming ferocity on such a regular basis. Maybe the stories that we concoct when we get alone by ourselves beyond this gathering, maybe those stories will be filled out more by some of that gruesome detail. But maybe, too, they will take from what is within us, peppered by the stories of our imagination and perhaps the stories of those generations who have gone before. One of the stories I heard yesterday of Eric was told by his nephew Robert, who shared with me that when he went down to the CNE to sign up, they had uniforms all stacked up there to give out, but they could only give one piece to any person because there wasn't enough for everybody to get a piece. So one person got shoes and another got a tunic, another one got a pair of pants, and they laughed and tried to trade to put together things that actually fit them. Those stories that have come to us down through generations, we can add them to our tale, and then maybe once we have that picture complete, we can find a way to seal it with what it is we have learned, by what it is we know we must do going forward, by how it is we must protect ourselves and future generations, how we must protect those plants growing out of the concrete, growing out in forests and rainforests that weren't touched by war, protecting the animals that have lived there forever from the competitive nature of human greed. Perhaps we can seal our stories with hope, a hope born of values that we talk about here every Sunday and that we seek to live out in our lives. And perhaps as we lose those whose hearts carry the actual stories, we'll be able to carry a story that reminds us of their sacrifice and their loss and their courage. And maybe we'll be bold enough to tell that story. Amen and thank you. It is too true that we have scarred this planet in ways from which it will never recover. And we have scarred the hearts of the people with whom we have shared this planet in ways that many will never recover. But it is also and equally true that we have within us the power to create beauty, to lift spirits, to grow a new world. We have that within us. And so on a day like today, when we remember some of the worst that we have done, some of our most ill-ventured tasks, jobs, things we've done, may we too remember that beautiful side of who we are, the powerful presence it has in our lives, and the incredible ways in which it could come to being. Would we only tell that story and remind ourselves how important love is in this broken world. Go from this place in peace.
You have been listening to a podcast from West Hill United Church located in Scarborough, Ontario, Canada. These podcasts are made possible by the generous support of our listeners, volunteers, and members of our community. To donate, go to our website, www.westhill.net, and click on the Canada Helps button, or go to www.westhill.net/donate.